one last springtime segment left. And this one is not exactly about flowers so much as it's about an invasive species. The good news is, this one tastes pretty good. This piece is coming from our now kinda defunct series, Eat the Invaders, which was a lot of fun to produce, even if it's not exactly the best tactical strategy for actually managing plants. But it did have a really catchy theme song.
No other species can defeat them.
They're invasive.
So why don't we just freaking eat them?
Because we're hungry.
Eat the invaders.
This is Eat the Invaders, where we talk about fighting off invasive species by using the somewhat questionable strategy of eating them. This is Japanese knotweed. It's a plant which was introduced, as so many of them are, because it has beautiful flowers and is really easy to grow. In Japan, when a volcano erupts and buries the land in magma, knotweed is often the first plant to break through the rocks and recolonize. It looks sort of like bamboo, with broad, tear-shaped leaves and tall, segmented stalks that can grow to be over your head. But here in the US, knotweed is a problem, and it is tenacious. It can grow through foundations, tear apart pavement or stone walls, or just take over your yard. But there's at least a little bit of good news.
In another week or two, as it warms up here, it's going to send up these little shoots. And when it sends those up, the first foot, foot and a half, is edible like asparagus.
That's Ken Hardcastle. He's a winemaker.
What's it taste like?
It's not as nice as asparagus for myself.
So I used to have knotweed that grew up all around my house when I was a kid.
And this is Taylor Quimby, our producer.
And I used to just eat it right off the stalk.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, so, like a lot of it.
A lot of it?
Yeah.
Wow.
I used to go out with a wiffle ball bat, and my parents would be happy to just send me off, and I would smash it down. This stuff really comes, this has that nice crack to it.
Oh, yeah.
We're standing in Ken's yard, where alongside a quaint little stream and nearby stone wall, there are two long rows of last year's knotweed, standing 7 or 8 feet high. Now, it's all dry and brittle, which, I will say, makes the idea of going into a field of this stuff with a wiffle ball bat seem pretty appealing.
We have hackers and whackers and all sorts of things, and we come out here in the evening, spend an hour just packing the crap out of it, you know?
All your stress, gone.
It's perfect. It's great. I've had friends come over and grab some sort of implement and head out into the woods and just hack Japanese knotweed for a while.
Let me interrupt this regularly scheduled Eat the Invaders segment with a little PSA. If your goal is to limit the spread of this invasive, this is a terrible idea.
Well, I wouldn't recommend that.
Doug Cyan is the state invasive species coordinator and says that even a tiny fragment of the stem, crown, or root can turn into a whole new plant. And what's more, cutting it stimulates growth.
So if you had just a few square feet of stems, all of a sudden you cut it, and the next year you could have, you know, exponential number of square footage of stems.
So Ken and Taylor's chopping probably has led their plants to spread exponentially. Should you actually want to get rid of knotweed, you can spray it with herbicides, or you can cut it down, dry it, burn it, cover the entire area where the knotweed was with the thickest tarp you can find, bury the tarp with wood chips, and leave it there for 5 years straight. So yeah, this stuff is invasive. But for Ken, who loves experimenting with things in order to make wine, and whose blueberry wine was good enough that it was featured on the Today Show, knotweed presented an opportunity.
What I did try doing was to ferment it, because the plant is all over my backyard, and it's supposedly loaded with resveratrol, which is a good antioxidant that's in red wine grapes. So I thought, oh, this is related in some way to red wine. Let's see if we can make wine out of it. So I collect the shoots when they come up, and chop those up and throw them in a fermenter.
Fermentation is a pretty simple process. First, you need yeast and you need sugars. And then you just need to provide a nice environment that the yeast will like to grow in. Certain yeasts will eat the sugar and then basically crap out alcohol.
So I take the plant, put it in some water, and add some sort of fermentable. Honey, maple sap, syrup, corn sugar, anything you got that has sugar in it.
Ken says that process of making alcohol will pull nutrients and color and flavor out of the knotweed or rhubarb or whatever you've got in there and stick it into the liquid.
I made a straight the straight up Japanese knotweed wine, when I first made it, after it was in the bottle, pouring it for my colleagues, they were amazed at how it smelled. It had this bouquet of baby wipes, something you pull off a box that smelled just like baby wipes.
The thing about a bottle of wine is the taste and smell changes as it ages. Ken says the baby wipe smell went away after the bottles sat on the shelf for a few years.
Watch your head down here. It's a little tight and old and gnarly.
Now we're in Ken's basement. It's an old school, dusty, cobwebby, dirt floored, kind of wet New England farmhouse basement. This is where he's got one last bottle of the wine that he made years ago out of knotweed.
So this is
K2.
K2, that's the second version of my Japanese knotweed wine where we blended in some blackberries from outside. And gotcha. We're going to bring this upstairs and
all
pull
right.
the cork on.
Do you want me to hold it?
Yeah, sure.
So how long has it been since you opened one of these bottles?
Probably 3 years.
So is it fair to say you don't know what this will taste like?
I think I know what it tastes like. But I'm sure I'm going to be surprised. If it smells like baby wipes, I'm really going to freak out. Whoops, sorry.
No worries. I will say that if you were to ask me to characterize this, complex is definitely a word I would use. And also I would say that that it being an easy drinking wine is probably not words I would use to describe it. Do you think that's right?
Yeah, this is a contemplative wine.
Ultimately, even the knotweed blackberry wine was a little too weird to try to sell in the winery. But the experiment did get another idea swirling around in Ken's head, one that ultimately was economically viable.
This plant, you let it grow like it likes to do, and in August, it sends out these tall, long fronds of little tiny white flowers. They're just loaded. It's beautiful. It's a decorative plant. It's a gorgeous plant. Bees love those flowers. They're going after these flowers, and they're taking that nectar back to their hive. The honey that's put up from Japanese knotweed looks like molasses. People call it black bamboo honey. It's fantastic. It's a very distinctive, very unique honey. I make mead out of that.
Mead, the alcoholic beverage associated with fantasy, Beowulf, Vikings, and Robin Hood's Friar Tuck. It's a drink that's made from fermented honey, and it seems to be making a comeback in certain circles. One newspaper even dubbed it the Game of Thrones effect.
So I make a honey wine commercially at Hermit Woods Winery, made out of the flowers, the nectar from the flowers of Japanese knotweed. We call it knot mead, K-N-O-T, mead.
When we talk about making a honey out of a plant that's an invasive species, if the strategy of eating an invasive species is also a way of getting rid of it, making honey means that you have to wait for it to flower. So it's kind of the opposite.
Well, here's the question. Why do you want to get rid of it if you're getting really nice honey from it? Is it an invasive when it's something that's valuable?
Okay, the truth is, Ken's goal was never really to try to get rid of his knotweed. In fact, his philosophy has a lot more to do with the final product than any thought of keeping invasive species under control. His big idea is that we should be making alcohol out of things that grow really well in our own backyards. And this all started after the first time he tried blueberry wine.
The next day, my buddy Chuck showed up on my doorstep with a bucket full of blueberries, said, Ken, make wine like that.
He's since branched out to try adding random plants that are decidedly not sweet.
Sumac, staghorn sumac, this plant behind us right here, I use it as a natural form of tannin into my blueberry wines and other things to give it more grip.
And he's even made a white wine from heirloom tomatoes that he says tastes just like Chardonnay.
So are you just, when you go for a walk out here, are you just looking around you thinking like, what around me could I turn into booze?
Yeah, always. You let the Saccharomyces on there, the critter that eats sugar and makes alcohol, do its magic, and you end up with this liquid that's nutritious and connects you to your gods and Mother Earth in new ways,
I don't think I've ever heard anybody refer to getting schwasted that quite that way.
Well, that's the way I see it. And actually, you take a honey wine and you connect to Mother Earth like no other product on the planet.
So for Ken, this is not really about eating invasives. It's more like, hey, we should be enjoying what grows in our backyard. So what's the problem with that?
Commercially, people harvest asparagus. So there are devices and tools to make it efficient, or ways of harvesting it with people to collect enough of it. And then I could ferment that and turn that into wine. And we won't have to spray it anymore. We'll cut it down and grow it in places so that we can craft it into a wine.
Well, this is the problem. When you get Ken excited about this idea, suddenly he's talking about deliberately planting one of the most invasive species around, which brings up a funny tension here. Remember Doug Sagan, the earnest state worker who fights invasives?
So you're friends with Ken Hardcastle, yes?
Yes, I am.
Have you been to his house?
I have been to his house.
He's got it everywhere.
He does have it everywhere.
Does he drive you crazy? I have to say that it seems like for you two to be friends is sort of like the odd couple a little bit.
It is. I love Ken. He's a great person, and I have a lot of respect for him. And he wants to control that Japanese knotweed on his property. It is getting overwhelming. And with the density of the population there, you'd be hard-pressed to be able to throw a baseball across it. It's pretty dense.
So, obviously, Ken is not actively thinking of starting a knotweed farm because he is, in fact, trying to eliminate some of the stuff on his property.
So I've been out there trying to assist him on a few weekends last year to try to get a foothold, and we're working on it.
So unlike us, you won't be able to try Ken Hardcastle's original knotweed blackberry wine. But if you want, you can go out in the spring and grab the new shoots when the plant first starts to push up from underground, like we did.
It's a lot more mild than I thought it would be.
Yeah, what did you think it was going to be?
Like super bitter.
No, it's good.
I'd eat this. I'm going to make this into a pie.
It's surprisingly tasty stuff. And in some ways, that's the problem. Because as we've learned, just cutting it actually might help it spread. The truth is, there are many invasive species that can't be controlled by eating them. And for the ones that are edible, what if they taste so good, people just want to plant more of them? Well, isn't that a pickle?
That story first aired in 2017. We reached out to Ken Hardcastle to see how things are going, and he said he's still making some wine derived from knotweed honey, but confessed that as far as growing the stuff, he's gone over to Doug's side. He's even been using herbicides to knock back the knotweed on his property. Outside In is produced by Taylor Quimby, Justine Paradise, Felix Poon, and me, Sam Evans-Brown. Producers emeritus from this episode include Molly Donahue, Logan Shannon, Jimmy Gutierrez, and Maureen McMurray. Erica Janik is our executive producer. Also, listen, folks, I don't know how to tell you this, but if you're not already, you should be subscribed to the podcast version of this show. A little secret, it means you can listen wherever you want. And pause, so you don't miss things. Music in this episode from Poddington Bear, Ari De Niro, Gumble, Krakatoa, and Blue Dot Sessions. Our theme music is by Breakmaster Cylinder. Outside In is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio.